This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. This morning, we woke up to an America that is both deeply familiar and completely unrecognizable to the America of yesterday. Donald Trump is president again, or will be. Republicans have won back control of the U.S. Senate. The U.S. House is still up for grabs. In Vermont, Democrats still control both chambers of the state legislature, but Republicans erased their veto-proof majority, reducing the Democrats' and progressives' legislative power. And Republican John Rogers appears to have unseated incumbent Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman. Today, we're going to hear from winners of statewide and local races. Tomorrow, we will feature the voices of voters, you. We'll open our phone lines to hear your reactions to the 2024 elections. Do the results change how you see the future for you, your community, or the state or country? Do you feel scared or hopeful, angry or gratified? Or maybe you're feeling something else entirely. You can email us about it anytime today at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. And then please join us for our call-in hour tomorrow at noon. To kick us off today, we are joined by Vermont Public reporter Peter Hirschfeld to help us understand the implications of last night's results on Vermont's state government. Pete, hi.
Hi, Michaela.
So you spent last evening at the Vermont Democratic Party's watch party in South Burlington. Tell us what the mood was like as the night wore on.
I've been to a lot of election night parties in Vermont, and the Democrats event at Higher Ground in South Burlington last night was one of the saddest and most somber that I've seen. The venue isn't that big, and it was half empty. People were sort of dutifully cheering statewide candidates as they delivered their speeches. But you could tell people's hearts just either weren't in it or were broken. What we saw on Tuesday was an absolute worst-case scenario for Democrats, and that reality was palpable.
Mm. It was, on the flip side, a big night for Vermont Republicans, but the Republican Party here is much more aligned with Governor Phil Scott than it is with President-elect Donald Trump. Let's take a minute here to sum of Governor Phil Scott's victory speech from last night. He received more than 71% of the vote.
As you know, this election was about one basic question. Can you, your aging parents, your grandparents, your kids, your grandkids, your neighbors, afford to live and thrive in Vermont if we don't make a course correction on the path set by legislative leaders over the last 2 years? It appears, based on some of the results we're seeing, is no, because Vermonters voted and sent a clear message.
Affordability, Pete, is the real undercurrent there. That was a center of Governor Phil Scott's campaign and his work leading the state over the years. Was there any issue bigger than affordability and taxes in these statewide campaigns?
You know, I've talked to dozens of voters over the past few weeks who say property taxes was the overriding issue for them. The governor's also mounted an incredibly effective opposition campaign against the clean heat standard, for instance. Democrats have acknowledged to me over the past 12 hours since all these results came in that the issue of affordability in general was a weakness for them. They don't think that's because of what they've done necessarily, but because of the way the public perceives what they've done. In a time of such economic instability, people are rightly worried about their pocketbooks. And Phil Scott's campaign machine has gone on the offensive in ways that we have not seen from him maybe since his first gubernatorial election. And that effort clearly won traction with voters.
Mm. And Republicans picked up more seats in the Vermont legislature yesterday than they have in a decade. What exactly does this mean for the Democratic and Progressive Party's supermajority, a word that we threw about so often last session? How has their power changed?
Well, I think the answer to that question in some ways requires putting really a fine point on what happened yesterday. We talk about wave elections, right? I think it's fair to say that what we saw in Vermont could fairly be characterized as a tsunami, a red tsunami. Republicans look like they're going to net 18 seats in the House, 6 in the Senate. Some of those losses are severe. Addison Representative Diane Lanfear, she's the chair of the House Appropriations Committee, one of the most powerful positions on that body, has lost her seat. Even in places where Democrats retain their seats, we saw voters send a message. In Chittenden Central, for instance, there were all Democrats on the ballot. But more voters in that district left their vote for state Senate blank than voted for the candidates. Wow. 38,000 people left their ballots blank. 17,000 people voted for Phil Baruth. So that's where Democrats are out right now. They're going to have to reckon with the losses they suffered yesterday in ways that may well substantively change their approach to governance. The legislative branch and the executive branch, because of the partisan dynamic, are going to have to work in ways that they have not over the past 4 years. There's bills that have to get enacted every year. These are the big important money bills, budget, property taxes. And we're going to see either a bipartisan meeting of the minds or we're going to see the kind of brinksmanship that we see in D.C. over, you know, worries about government shutdowns.
Hmm. Well, Governor Scott campaigned very hard for a number of Republicans in these statewide races. Do you think that made a difference in these campaigns? Can we know?
Yeah, I think absolutely 100% it made a difference, and maybe a huge one. Phil Scott spent more than $450,000 from his own campaign war chest on TV ads, radio ads, postcards. These are spots that had Phil Scott in them, but they were not for Phil Scott's benefit primarily. They were designed to show voters that the most popular governor in the country is giving them permission to vote Republican on down ballot races. He vouched for these candidates in ways he has not in the past. And he simultaneously provided an organizational framework that the Vermont GOP could not. The Republican Party's state committee raised a grand total of about $160,000 during the last cycle. Democrats, comparatively, spent $700,000 this year alone on their operation. They have 5 full-time staffers doing recruitment, field organizing, targeted voter outreach. The GOP couldn't compete with that kind of operation in past cycles. And what Phil Scott did this year was even the playing field by using his own political and financial capital to provide the kind of electioneering boost that the conventional GOP could not.
Well, one candidate he certainly did support was John Rogers, who appears to have won the lieutenant governor's race. He's a 6,000 vote lead over David Zuckerman, with All Towns reporting. Now, Rogers is a Scott Republican through and through. He even said that he wrote in Scott for his U.S. presidential vote instead of voting for Harris or Trump. There's been a lot of attention paid in this race for what both candidates represent. But at the end of the day, the lieutenant governor doesn't have all that much power, but it's still a very significant race. Can you tell us why?
History has shown us, Michaela, that lieutenant governors have a statistically high likelihood of going on to higher office. We've seen that time and again. Phil Scott is one big example of that, right? And why does that matter? I think it matters because Republicans have been asking themselves one big question for the past 8 years, and that is, what is our future after Phil Scott steps down? There hasn't been an obvious answer to that question. In John Rogers, who pulled off one of the most unlikely feats in Vermont politics by ousting an incumbent statewide office holder, he becomes somebody who a lot of folks, I think, will begin looking at to see if maybe he's the person that can fill those shoes.
And we're going to be joined by John Rogers in just a few minutes, so be sure to stay tuned for that conversation. Pete, as we look to the days and months ahead and this new biennium, where does the Vermont Democratic Party go from here?
So, you know, we're guilty of recency bias, right? And Republicans made a lot of gains. That's important to note. The Democratic Party is unquestionably still the most powerful political party in Vermont right now. The gains Republicans made in the House don't change that. The gains they made in the Senate don't change that. John Rogers doesn't change that. I think Democrats in Vermont and the rest of the country are going to have some hard conversations in the coming weeks to figure out what happened and how they're going to respond. The most interesting detail to me from yesterday's elections results was in the race for president in Vermont. So 119,000 Vermonters voted for Donald Trump this year, 2024. That's 7,000 more than voted for him in 2020. So more Vermonters voted for Trump after January 6th than before it. So something is going on in the mind of the electorate right now, obviously. And Democrats are going to have to figure out what that is in order to stop the bleeding that we saw last night.
Mm. Well, Pete, you might have just answered my last question for you. I don't know how much you slept last night. I'm guessing it wasn't too much.
Almost not at all.
If I know anything about you, you have a lot of stories up your sleeve and paths you want to follow as a State House reporter. What are some of those threads that you want to pull in the coming days?
You know, David Zuckerman hasn't conceded yet. And because no candidate in that race received more than 50% of the vote, then it's lawmakers under Vermont's constitution that are going to decide that race when they return in January. And I'm still waiting to hear what Zuckerman asked them to do. Another thread, Democrats lost the U.S. Senate. This is going to have enormous ramifications for Bernie Sanders' influence in Congress. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like. Finally, you know, I'm going to be looking for tea leaves that might tell us how Republicans and Democrats are going to coexist in Montpelier next year. You know, there's a scenario where Vermont becomes an exemplar of bipartisanship. There's a scenario where we relive the pretty unnerving brinksmanship that we saw during Phil Scott's first term in office. So definitely lots to keep an eye on.
Vermont Public Reporter Pete Hirschfeld, thank you so much for joining us
today. Yeah, thank you, Michaela. It's great to be with you.
Tomorrow, we are going to feature your voices on Vermont Edition. We're going to open up our phone lines to hear your reactions to the 2024 elections. And we want to know, do the results from last night change how you see your future or that of your community, the state, or the country? You can email us anytime today at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. And our phone lines will open up tomorrow at noon. Coming up this hour, we're going to hear from winners of Vermont's Senate races, including some of the Republicans supported by Governor Phil Scott. We'll also speak with John Rogers. That's in just a minute on Vermont Edition. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. In a tight race, Republican John Rogers of Glover appears to have won Vermont's lieutenant governorship. The race hasn't formally been called, but all towns are reporting, and Rogers leads by about 6,000 votes over incumbent Progressive Democrat David Zuckerman of Hinesburg. Rogers served for years as a Democratic member of both the Vermont House and Senate. He also owns a stoneworking and excavation business and a hemp and cannabis farm. He joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Michaela.
Yeah, we're glad to have you this morning now, or this afternoon. Time is a circle today. you appear to have won with just over 46% of the vote to David Zuckerman's 44.6%. And we bring up these exact percentages because, again, this race hasn't been formally called yet. First, can you tell us why?
Well, sure. As Pete mentioned earlier, when it's under 50%, it does have to go to the legislature. We feel comfortable with our lead that it's more than can be overcome, even if my opponent asks for a recount. The Secretary of State's office is giving the clerks 48 hours, as they always do, to make sure their counts are all on before they have what they call their official count. And then it goes to the in November, I think on the 12th, it goes to the legislature for the caucusing canvassing committee. And then because I got under 50%, it will go to a vote of the full legislature.
Has David Zuckerman called you? Have you two been in touch in the past 12 hours?
He sent me a text early this morning and said that it was obvious that I had more votes than he did, and he was going to look into the results and call me later. But I did see a interview with him on WCAX, and it appeared he wasn't intending to make a decision for a couple of days, so we'll see what happens there.
This was at times a very personal contest, between the two of you. We saw that on display in the Vermont Public Lieutenant Governor debate that we hosted. You said during that debate that David Zuckerman accused you of being toxic, a toxic man, and tying you to President-elect Donald Trump. He also took issue with the way that you characterized him and his campaign priorities. Why do you think this race got so personal?
Well, I talked with David early on. You know, he says that he doesn't like the way negative national politics goes, but there was a lot of that, and it was just unfortunate, and I addressed it individually with him early on. He said he'd do something about it, but he didn't, and so it was just disappointing that he went negative and used a lot of misinformation to try to convince people that I was something else, and I wanted to talk about issues, and I wanted to be positive. It was a bit disappointing, and it did become personal, because I think if you talk with the people that I worked with in the legislature, I have a reputation for being one of the most honest people there. I've actually had people tell me that I'm too honest, which is a criticism I'll take. And I did work bipartisanly for my constituents, and I left that building with a good reputation. And so to have those kind of misleading personal attacks in his fundraising emails, it was just a little bit disturbing. And so that did put a bad tone on the campaign itself.
Let's talk about the issues here. What is your first priority going to be as lieutenant governor if things go the way they appear to be going?
Well, affordability is the main issue on people's minds as I cross the state. And, you know, we have a ton of issues, but nothing else matters if we can't afford to live here. And so, quite personally, I'm feeling like I can be the bridge between the parties, because I did serve for so long as a Democrat, and now I'm serving with the Republicans. And as I said, I have a reputation for working in a nonpartisan way. And once we get elected, I really hope that partisanship can be set aside and we can all work for the benefit of Vermonters, because we have a lot of serious issues that need to be figured out in the near term, because people are hurting financially. And so I'm hoping that I can help with that, and that Republicans and Democrats can get together and compromise and move forward with good legislation for Vermonters.
And John Rogers, the lieutenant governorship is a really unique position. I mean, you're second in line to be governor, but it's also in many ways a ceremonial position, and very different than what your job was when you were a state representative or state senator. How exactly will you go about pushing forward those priorities, particularly around affordability, with the constraints that this new position has?
Yeah, well, I think the position has been underutilized for years. I plan to work with legislators on policy, and, you know, I can't introduce policy as the lieutenant governor, but I can work with senators and representatives. I intend to advocate for good policies and fight against bad policies, and use the platform to both bring Vermonters' voices to the state house, because I think that has been lost in the last couple of years. I think the legislature and the special interest are operating in a bubble, and I think that is part of the problem. So I hope to be able to bring Vermonters' voices and concerns to the state house, but also get information out to Vermonters about what is going on in the State House and how these bills, how these policies will affect them individually, because a lot of folks just don't understand what's happening. People work hard. They're tired. Legislation is hard to follow. I mean, you talk with lobbyists in the building, and they get paid good money to follow legislation, and they can only follow a few bills at a time. So I think it's really important that Vermonters understand what the policies are doing and how their representatives and senators are voting.
And John Rogers, you left the Democratic Party to run as a Republican in this election, though you have been very clear that you do not agree with President Trump's policies. How are you feeling about his victory, and how do you see his administration affecting Vermonters?
Well, I like to say that the party left me, Michaela. The way I was brought up, Democrats were fiscally conservative and socially responsible, and the fiscal conservative part has left the party. And I looked at Phil Scott and said, well, there's a guy who's very similar to me, even though he's got an R beside his name, and I've spent a lifetime with a D beside my name, and that's why I switched parties. But I joined the party of Phil Scott, not the party of Donald Trump. And like a lot of Vermonters, I'm a little bit worried. I hope the next 4 years goes okay. But some of the rhetoric out of the Trump campaign is a little concerning.
But what about the effect of a second Trump presidency and how it could affect Vermonters?
Well, none of us really know, right? I mean, it's going to be a wait and see. I'm a little nervous about it, and I hope that we, as Vermont state government, can make sure Vermonters are taken care of no matter what the federal government does.
John Rogers, who appears to have won Vermont's lieutenant governorship, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, six seats in Vermont's Senate flipped on Election Day. Republicans broke the Democratic supermajority. Four of those races unseated incumbents, and two other seats had opened up after long-serving Democrats vacated their positions. One of last night's Republican winners in Vermont's Senate was Steve Heffernan, who joins us now. He's the senator-elect for Addison County. He unseated the incumbent Democrat, Chris Bray, who had been in that seat since 2013. Bray was also the chair of the Senate Natural Resources and Energy Committee. Steve Heffernan is a member of the Vermont National Guard and a business owner from Bristol. He'll be representing Addison County alongside Democrat Ruth Hardy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, some folks have described your win as an upset victory. Do you see it that way?
No. I see it as just that Vermonters were ready for balance in the Senate.
What do you think are some of the issues that you focused on in your campaign that you believe led voters in Addison County to choose you over the incumbent, a person they know well?
The main two issues are one, the S5, the Home Heating Act, and then the high rise of property tax due to education.
Can you tell us more? What about the Affordable Heat Act do you think swayed voters to vote for you?
The biggest thing is passing a bill before you even know what it's going to cost. I think that really concerns a lot of Vermonters that, hey, I know you put affordable in the name, but all the studies coming out from the Public Utilities Commission and the consulting firms were saying, this is going to cost us more than 70 cents a gallon. We're looking at, you know, anywhere from $4 on. And I think that really resonated with voters. Go ahead.
Oh, no, please finish your thought.
That's what resounded with voters. And even though Chris Bray was like, it's not going to cost anything in 2025, we want to study it more. Vermonters were wise enough. I'm not worried about 2025. I'm worried about 26, 27, and beyond. And when you have seniors coming up in you know, saying I'm on a very fixed budget, and you know, my property tax went up, and now the threat of this Home Heat Act is making me really worried that I can't stay in my home.
You also brought up property taxes. What do you plan to do in your new role in the Senate to address those concerns around the tax burden?
So property tax right now, what is tied to the education fund, and this is just an idea, is that we try to move it away from property tax to something that affects all taxpayers, not just people that own property, to give a more... So you have a more fair property tax on more fair property tax. When you look at your property tax bill and only a quarter or a third goes to the municipality to run your town and the rest goes to education, I know I'm very concerned when I see it that Vermont, yes, education is very important, but we're middle of the road for standards.
So you're proposing a big overhaul of the way Vermont funds its public education system.
I would want to look at it. I wouldn't say, yes, that's what we want to do, but I would like to look at other options, check what other states are doing, and not just jump into it wholeheartedly. It's something that we all can agree on.
Now, you'll be representing Addison County. These issues that we've been discussing have come up in every part of the state. I'm curious if there are specific concerns that you've heard from voters in Addison County, maybe something that makes Addison County a little different than other parts of the state, that you plan to address or highlight in the Senate.
So as of right now, being a new senator, I'm sure issues will come up that I want to highlight. At this moment, unfortunately, education seems to be one of the biggest ones, as well as this Home Heating Act. Those seem to be the main concern. I've also concerns, you know, from some beekeepers and looking into what pesticides we're using. And, you know, they're things that definitely want to take a more solid look at.
And you're referring to there the debate over banning neonics, a type of pesticide that's often used
correct.
On farms.
Yes, right. Correct.
Now, you're going to be representing Addison County alongside your Democratic colleague, Ruth Hardy. How do you envision your working relationship with her?
Well, Ruth and I have bumped into each other a couple times and have been very cordial. And I hope we will always be that way, even if we have differences. Obviously, the two parties do have two different mindsets, but we should all be working for what's best for Vermont and making Vermont an affordable place that we all can live. That's one of my biggest concerns, is making it affordable for you, me, our kids, our grandkids, and the future to come. And the road we're on right now, it looks like it will not become affordable if we keep doing this, the stuff that we're doing.
And lastly, any thoughts to share on the national election results in terms of Donald Trump winning re-election and the Republican victory in the U.S. Senate?
As a Republican, I like it. I don't always like what Donald Trump stands for and the way he presents himself. I see that is sometimes a big issue. Out of the two candidates, I didn't vote for either, but if I would have preferred he has more experience, I probably would have if I was going to vote. But I told my voters I would stay away from it, and I did. Now I'm hoping that, you know, being that Vermont's so blue that sometimes, yeah, you weren't no help for me. Yeah, that would be one of my concerns for Vermont. But, you know, hopefully enough of us can give a voice to make sure Vermont gets its fair shake when it comes to federal dollars.
Steve Heffernan is the senator-elect for Addison County. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
We're joined now by another state senator, Thomas Chittenden of South Burlington. He was reelected last night to represent the Chittenden Southeast District alongside fellow Democrats Ginny Lyons and Keisha Ram Hinsdale. He's a member of the Senate Committee on Finance and has previously served 2 terms in the Senate. Senator Chittenden, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Michaela. This is my first time on Vermont Public at the lunch hour, and I'm a little nervous.
Oh, well, welcome. No need to be nervous here. This was a pretty consequential race. How confident were you going into Election Day?
This was the 11th election or ballot I've been on, and I thought I was going to lose every single one of them. So I never assume or take for granted voters. I've been doing what I can over the past few months to answer all questionnaires, surveys, attend community events, school board meetings, and respond to constituents. So I didn't have any degree of confidence different than previous elections.
You did win, so congratulations. And I'm curious to hear, just like I was talking about with Senator-elect Steve Heffernan, the issues that you centered in this campaign, whether they be specific to your area of the state or more statewide issues like Steve Heffernan was highlighting, what were some of those key priorities that came up again and again in your conversations with voters?
Well, really three things. One, I would start with taxes. The property tax bills that Vermonters have been opening over the past few weeks are very concerning. And the one mantra that I've heard, not just from Republicans, but from many Democrats, is they have heard or felt like the Democrats over the last 2 years started with the question, where can we raise more money? And they really want us to start with where could we spend less, or where could we be more thoughtful about where we're putting our resources and what results we're getting from them. And that's across the board, both at the local level in our schools and also within state government. So as I look at the results yesterday, that's a takeaway I have. That is, if the results hold and the official ballot does let me serve for another 2 years, I personally will continue, or more prominently, start with the question, what are we spending our money on and what results are we getting for those dollars?
So is that going to change how you do your job and how you vote on issues that might come up again this session, such as the Affordable Heat Act?
So I've made a statement on the Affordable Heat Act, and I was very much on the bubble on that bill when we did pass it. I did vote for it because of one key critical element that Senator Jane Kitchell added in the appropriations, which is the checkback. I had serious concerns. Very smart people were telling me about the feasibility of this and questioning its feasibility. I came to a yes because of this condition that now makes the next legislature have to vote on to implement this. So I felt that we would have more information at this time, which we now do. The other takeaway I have from yesterday's election ties right to this, Michaela, which is Vermonters listen to Phil Scott, and they want the legislature to do so too. And so I look at the results from yesterday and at this coming session, we as a Democratic Party and as a whole legislature need to work better across the aisle to come to more common sense, common ground solutions, and really factor in the governor and his team's perspectives. The concern I have is I've seen too many times in my limited time, I'm still relatively a new guy down there, a new person down there, that the legislature sometimes thinks they know better than the professionals that are hired into the administrative positions with the perspective, the depth, the day in, day out, the knowledge of how mechanics work. And so what I want to see more of is that our legislative committees factor in the experts that are serving with the governor, regardless of party, and what they tell us about what's feasible and not feasible. Because I think the governor was proven right on multiple fronts, both in this election and with the PUC report on the Affordable Heat Act, that it's not tenable, that we can't stand up this clean heat exchange as a small state of Vermont. It doesn't make any fiscal sense.
So you're also saying there that we might see fewer overrides of Governor Phil Scott's vetoes than we did last session when there was a record number of those.
I don't know much, but one thing I would say is if there are 13 elected Republicans and the magic number is 20, or do the math the other way, you need 11 to sustain the veto. I would expect more vetoes to be sustained if the Democratic legislature, House and Senate, passes bills that the administration objects to.
I'm also hoping we can go a little bit deeper on property taxes, because the increases that were passed last session are going to create some pretty steep tax hikes for some towns in Chittenden County. What exactly are you going to do to advocate for your constituents who are struggling with their tax burden?
Really, three things come to mind. One, I do think we need to scrutinize the spending in the Ed Fund that's not education related. By some estimates, that's $50 to $100 million. If we're spending money on universal meals, for example, or on mental health services, social supports, those things aren't education related, and so they shouldn't be funded on the backs of our property taxpayers. So looking at, I understand from multiple comments made by elected officials at the statewide level that that's commonly done in other states where non-education expenditures are funded through more broad-based sources, including income taxes, sales tax, purchase and use taxes, and so on. So that's a way to lighten the property tax. But that doesn't get at the root issue, which is spending. And that's where I think we, and I, for one, want to look a lot more closely at the Scott Beck plan. For those Vermont insiders that follow this closely, Scott Beck, now Senator-elect Beck, has a grilly, and he knows this formula better than I do, better than a lot of people in the building. And he sees a way to better connect local votes on local school budgets with what they're voting on to drive more scrutiny so that we're ensuring that we're spending dollars where they need to be spent to optimize our outcome at a level Vermonters can afford. Other than that, we just re-implemented the excess spending threshold. I'd like to see that more granularly applied to different types of spending across school districts so that you're not just penalizing somebody for spending overall pupil-wide, but instead on different categories of spending. There's ways to make that more granular, which could also drive better equity across our school districts.
Well, lastly, do you have any thoughts to share on the national election results in terms of how another Trump administration could affect Vermont?
Vermont, I haven't thought about it, but I am a Democrat and have been since Howard Dean inspired me back in 2004 when he ran for the presidency. I'm heartbroken today. I'm looking at another 4 years of what I characterize as chaos and any failure of leadership and eloquence and how they communicated and represented us on the national stage. How that translates to Vermont, I don't know. With the Senate being lost as well, I'm not at that level of politics to know how the D.C. interactions are going to hurt. But I know that we have felt the loss of Senator Patrick Leahy's influence in the Senate. I fully support and really love Peter Welch and Bernie Sanders. They are still relatively new compared to the experience that we had with Senator Leahy before he retired. So I'm not a pessimist. I do think Vermont's going to be fine. The country's going to be fine. But I, for one, woke up this morning heartbroken.
State Senator Thomas Chittenden of the Chittenden Southeast District, thank you so much for joining us today.
Anytime.
Tomorrow, listeners, we are really hoping to hear from you. Again, we're going to open up our phone lines to hear your reactions to the 2024 elections. Is this all bringing you back to 2016, or does this year feel entirely different? You can email us anytime today with your thoughts about local, statewide, or national election results to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. We're already seeing a number of emails come in from you all. And we also really hope that you could join us for our call-in hour tomorrow at noon. Coming up today, Congresswoman Becca Ballant will join us. She just won a second term in the U.S. House of Representatives. That's in just a minute. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. While last night brought shakeups at the state level in Vermont, our congressional delegation will remain the same. Senator Peter Welch was not up for re-election this year. Senator Bernie Sanders of Burlington won his re-election bid with about 62% of the vote, beating his Republican challenger, Gerald Malloy.
The reality is that our country faces, as all of you know, enormous crises. And Jane and I thought hard about whether or not we wanted another term, wanted to try for another term, but we felt we couldn't turn our backs on a country, our country and our state, at this terribly pivotal moment in American history.
Congresswoman Becca Ballant, Vermont's sole representative to Congress from Brattleboro, won her second term in the U.S. House with nearly 58% of the vote over Republican Mark Kirster. She joins us now. Representative Ballant, welcome.
Thank you so much, Michaela. Happy to be here.
Now, you won your race, but control of the U.S. House is still up for grabs. There are dozens of races that are still too close to call as of today. And Donald Trump will be our next president. How are you feeling this morning?
So, as you can imagine, I'm feeling a whole host of emotions. Didn't sleep much last night, and it is, as you say, it's true. We're still waiting to find out what will happen in the House. And I am feeling gratitude for Vermonters for, believing in the work that I'm doing in conjunction with my staff and with the senators. I feel like people understood that I was trying to be a congresswoman for all Vermonters and really trying to do all that I can to make life better for people here in Vermont. And so that I'm filled with gratitude and, of course, also filled with a lot of deep disappointment. And, you know, when you look at the campaign that Donald Trump has run for months, it is going to go down as one of the darkest, most divisive, racism, sexism, just deep disparaging of the trans community. I mean, it's just so dark. And so I was giving myself comfort this morning by knowing that he has lied so much about so many things that I really don't know who we're going to get. Okay. That will he really defund the Weather Service like he's threatened to? Will he really ban vaccines as he's threatened to? You know, what is the work that I can do in the face of that? And the work, frankly, is the same for me, which is to find people in the House that I can work with in coalition. And that's what I'm going to continue to do, because we do need to hold this administration, this incoming administration, accountable. And I do need to seek out those governing-minded Republicans who exist. They just don't speak up. And they are going to be critical partners in helping us to thwart some of his most dangerous instincts. So we got work to do, and I'm ready to do it.
Well, a major concern in Vermont and nationally is over inflation and the cost of living. And voters, I'm talking nationally here, made it pretty clear that they don't think Democrats are on the right path in addressing this concern. In your second term, how are you going to work to address issues around cost of living and affordability?
Well, that is certainly something that, you know, I have been working on my entire career, both in the state Senate and in Congress, you know, really looking at the housing crisis and needing to have bold investments in housing to reduce those costs, looking at the work that our senators have done on reducing prescription drugs. We have to build on that. And what you say is true, that there is, as I've said, a second gilded age that we find ourselves in here. Working people are struggling. And the work for me is figuring out how do we build a broad coalition of working people across this country that will enable us to do the work that families need us to do, whether it's increasing the minimum wage, again, building housing, making sure that we're bringing down costs of everyday items. And I just don't have confidence that is what the Trump administration is going to be focused on based on the kind of campaign that he ran. But that is the work we need to do, absolutely. And I think we heard that loud and clear. And the tricky part for all of us is how do you both do the work that is meaningful for people and then communicate to people about the work that you have done, because I think there was a disconnection. The Biden administration did a tremendous amount of work reducing prescription drug prices and other things that did make life affordable. It certainly didn't translate to voters. And we're going to have to do a postmortem of why that is and how do we do a better job bringing coalitions of people together across race, across gender, across geography, to really work for working families. And that's work that I'm absolutely recommitting myself to this morning.
Congresswoman Becca Ballant, we still don't know what's going to happen with control of the House. But if Republicans win control and they already have control of the Senate and the presidency, that's a huge source of power right there. And one issue that we heard about from Vermonters again and again yesterday when our reporters were out at the polls was about abortion access. I mean, the state codified abortion access in its constitution and with a state law, but a national abortion ban would supersede those laws. Do you expect the House to take any sort of action around abortion in this next session?
Yeah, it's something that obviously was weighing on me terribly in the middle of the night and this morning. Look, this previous Congress was the least productive in modern history. What the work that we did in the House under Republican leadership, we have nothing to show for it. We truly don't. And there is a level of incompetence there that I know will continue. So that gives me comfort when you look at things like action that they will take against reproductive rights. But this is, again, a place where I need to be building up those relationships that I already have, that I continue to build on, and say to governing-minded Republicans, you know your constituents do not want a national abortion ban. You know your constituents want IVF protected. You know, you have to stand together with us so that that doesn't happen. It is not a winning issue for them. They know it, and so they are going to have to find their backbone and push against the most dangerous instincts of this incoming administration when it comes to reproductive rights. Hmm.
And Congresswoman, I'm curious what you think this new reality means for the overall influence of Vermont's congressional delegation there in the House and Senate. I mean, Senator Bernie Sanders is going to lose his committee chairmanship.
Yes, yes. So as we know from, if you watch government at all, it goes in cycles. And, clearly, when you look nationally, the Democrats did not have a good night last night. And we are going to be in a rebuilding phase. But something that I know about each of us, Senator Welch, Senator Sanders, and myself, is that we are creative people. We are people who understand that you need to work with other people to get things done. And we're going to continue to do that. Senator Sanders was always very effective at using legislation that was moving, even when he was in the minority, to get things attached to those bills. Welch certainly also a very experienced legislator. But yes, we are going to have to think carefully about how we use our influence together, the three of us, but also how we continue to reach across the aisle to people who can help us deliver the work that we need to do to make life better for Vermonters. That's our charge, and we take it very seriously.
We have about a minute left here, and I want to ask you, Congresswoman, what do you plan to do between now and Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2025, to prepare yourself for the work ahead of you?
Well, I know it may be shocking to hear, but the House still needs to pass a budget. So I'm back in D.C. on Monday to try to get government funded before another shutdown right before the Christmas break. So that's going to take a lot of my attention. But what I have been thinking about in earnest over the last 6 months is, how do I use the skills that I uniquely have as a communicator, as someone who is a connector? How do I use those skills to the best of my ability in the Congress I'm going to have? And I have some ideas about that, but it absolutely comes down to the fact that we as human beings are hardwired for connection. That is how I've always operated as a teacher, as a legislator, as a community member. And so I'm going to find those opportunities. And I've already reached out to a woman named Donna Hicks, who does work on dignity and how do we bring the country back into a place of seeing each other's inherent dignity. Because if we can't do that, then I have very strong concerns about the Republic.
Sounds like you're also ready to bust out that teacher voice again.
Yes, you hear it in me, don't you?
I do.
You hear it in me. Yeah. So I'm, certainly disappointed this morning, but I'm ready to do the work that needs to be done, because I believe deeply in this country and this democracy. And that's what's guiding me today.
Congresswoman Becca Ballin, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Michaela. Okay, bye-bye.
Congresswoman Ballin won her second term in office last night. She was elected first in 2022 as Vermont's first woman and gay person to represent the state in Congress. After hearing from winners of Vermont's elections today, what are you thinking? What do you hope for our state and our federal government? How do you feel? We're going to be hosting an open phone show tomorrow right here on Vermont Edition, where we'll center your voices. You can email us your thoughts anytime today at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org, or please do call in at noon and join the conversation. Today's show was directed by James Stewart and Aaliyah Papes. Our managing producer is John Ahrens. Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro are our producers. And our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.